Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to a very special and delightful and unpredictable online event today called Trickster Medicine, Liberating Your Soul to Liberate Our World. My name is Stephen Dynan. I'm the founder and CEO of The Shift Network, and I'm excited to go on an adventure today with you with visionary activist astrologer and chief trickster at Coyote News Network. It's quite a title. Her name is Carolyn Casey, and if you haven't heard of her, her teachings are quite remarkable in illuminating the path for spiritual seekers and how we begin to free up our own minds and align with deeper forces and create a little mythological magic in our own lives and then also impact the world. She's known for her unique art of astro-mythological political guiding meta-storytelling, which is a mouthful that also speaks to this weaving of many different worlds. So for over 19 years, Carolyn has been the weaver of context for the Visionary Activist Show on KPFA, and she's really tells us everything we need to know about democracy, and especially using an astrological frame. So she's been published by Sounds True and Random House and all kinds of good stuff on the publishing, and you know, been on Nightline and CNN's Crossfire, and really bridged into a lot of worlds where you wouldn't think they would be super open to the trickster magic. So we're going to dive into the trickster medicine today, and I also want to just let you know up front that we'll have a chance to go much, much deeper with Carolyn into this terrain in an upcoming program and course with the Shift Network. So we'll share a little bit about that towards the end. So, Carolyn, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Woof, woof. Yeah, that's wonderful. Yes, because part of our trickster dynamic is let's all move our emotional default setting from whatever it is to woof, woof, want to play, which is intrinsically liberating. And I like to, with myself and others, to offer and go, let's think of our lives as though it were a spiritual detective novel in which every quirky affinity and event and trouble and problem and grace is all a clue worthy to be reverenced. So we are all invited to think of our heritage and our circumstances not as curses but as guidelines. So I was born into a political family in Washington, D.C., the youngest of five, which is a kind of storytelling fairy tale spot. So from an early age, you know, wedding the kind of spiritual, mythological, fairy tale, playful into the political realm, you know, has been kind of my assignment to cross borders, and especially the dynamic of our individual selves to the collective. Part of my dedication to astrology that began, really, I had the great good luck. I mean, I was a grumpy teenager, rah, 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 it's all just terrible, until finding metaphysics and I would even say responsible, creative, entheogenic use, and had the great good fortune to be the kid who hung out at Dr. Andrew Weil's salon, where there were people clerking for the Supreme Court and people coming back from India and reporting in, and we were doing responsible things, reading all of the great mythologist Joseph Campbell. And in that context, I thought, where astrology and metaphysics were spoken of with respect, I thought, well, okay, either this magical worldview that we're in a storytelling creation, you know, in this call and response, you know, hello, synchronicity, either the magical life is completely true, in which case it's the way to live, or even if it's not true, let's just try living that way. So that's the kind of the trickster dynamic going, let's live as though the story, the desirable story, were true and see what happens. And then, indeed, you know, it's like for all of us, I think there are kind of presiding gods or intelligences around everything that any one of us is doing, the Shift Network or, you know, social activism or, you know, healing or Reiki or whatever, there's an intelligence behind that discipline. Everything's alive. And after we've put in a certain amount of time, it's like the backstage gods go, well, they farted around for a while, but now they've really got traction, so we will guide them. So in that sense, whatever we're dedicated to, the path begins to unfold and we're not alone. We meet the right person, the right course, the right conversation. You know, because, you know, we all know that we can sometimes alone feel like, you know, a pathetic weenie in the face of a vast, uncaring universe when we call out, like, hello, you know, and there's nothing coming back. But there are those times, and we can increase those times, where we call out, you know, hello, and there's this resounding correspondence, the synchronicity, the coin we find on the street, the everything like that. And we can increase our hum, our dance with that. There are ways to kind of increase available synchronicity. So, yeah, so off I went, you know, from Dr. Andrew Weil's salon, you know, into, you know, the guided by the intelligence of astrology, you know, and the dedication to weave personal growth and spiritual growth and trickster, always trickster, we'll come back to that, you know, into the political realm. You know, a lot of people go, oh, politics, I don't want to poison my mind. But we go, yeah, we don't want to poison our mind, but we do want to be influential. And part of the beauty of astrology and the dynamic of trickster, which is it's the ornery, creative, disobedient, you know, unique part of all of us that really yearns to come alive right now. And that's why I am so enthused to gather with the likes of yourself and the gather and everyone on this call going, a call is going forth. You know, trickster represents nature's evolutionary ingenuity that comes alive in the world in crisis. It is coyote, it is raven, it is seeds that sprout after drought or flood or cataclysm. It is nature's resilient, defiant, ha-ha pluckiness. It's got an attitude, you know, it's a part of all of us that has an attitude that we might find amusing. I live with an actual coyote or half coyote, Stella Coyote, for she's almost 19 and still kick butt. So I've learned a lot about coyotes and a lot about wolves, a lot about animals. We want to derive, you know, qualities of intelligence from nature. But one of the things that coyotes do that is very witty is they will follow people who are laying mean traps for them, and then they've learned how to set the trap afterwards, and then they pee all over it just to show a kind of attitude. And we go, well, that's one part of our repertoire that we want to add, you know, whenever there's a prison. And the power of unpredictability, you know, there is no prison for the unpredictable. So all of us may be crossing borders, leaving, you know, just the ghettos of agreement into, you know, foreign lands, or we just, you know, encounter those things that give us conniption fits. And all of the things that I'm eager to proffer are test driven. I've really been working these things as we're all invited to do. So I will go to the underworld. I have gone several times to CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, full of the most poisonous and vituperative of humans on the planet, just to see if trickster medicine works even there. And so you know, many things are in this. You know, I will see people that I disapprove of, you know, right-wing Ayn Rand Austrian economists, and they go, no, no. But employing trickster dynamic, you know, we all have and animate. I pull out my harumphitude composter because communication is never possible when we have a judgmental attitude, so composting harumphitude. And those Austrian economists came up to me looking sort of like my creative self and go, you, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. And they said, oh, that is so cool, right? So if I'd said something, you know, normal, like I'm a feminist, witch, environmentalist, like, no, nothing. So the power of liberating language, it liberated them, uh-huh. It liberated me, it liberated us into actually finding common ground, because some of them said, well, no regulations, no, you know, no regulations ever, you know, because I want to play the games that I want to play. And so I get to step back in, as we all get to do, and say, well, that's interesting, because the essence of games is rules. That's kind of what makes a game. And we live on this planet where there's actually limits, like only so much water, like the, you know, Cleopatra's bath water is circulating now. So, and the right-wing person said, oh, I guess I better go rethink my, what do you call it, metaphor? And I go, yes, you do that. There we go. So, again, the idea of unpredictable liberates ourselves and others, even just for fun, you know, try this at home. Sticking the word liberating in front of anything we hold dear is really fun. And it comes from a friend of mine, a wonderful colleague who is a political operative in a good way, but also she loves early Christianity before it got kind of So she calls what she does liberating Christianity. So liberating, and so we might go liberating Zen, liberating love, liberating shift, liberating fill in your name right now, because it means it's a quality of the thing, but it's also an action that we're taking. We want to honor the liberating qualities of whatever we love, but we also want to liberate it. And, you know, in the beautiful astrological language, Uranus is ingenuity, and it's one part of trickster. And its symbol, its glyph, it's like a little H with a circle drop below it. So it looks like an archaic jail key. You know, it's unlock yourself and pass it on. It's the wonderful Hafez line in which he says, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman, or guy, ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. So let that be, you know, one of all of our, everybody on this wonderful call, you know, a secret middle name, you know, Stephen tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners, you know, Dinan, there we go. And that idea also of liberating. So, yes, qualities, we all want to become our most unique selves. And we say, you know, all cultures grow their philosophies and their spiritual teachings according to that culture, and it changes. You know, when people say about astrology, you know, what about the predictive thing? And Vedic astrology, very beautiful. But if one is born into a feudal society, 14th century India, your life is quite predictable. So you'll come up with quite predictable philosophies. But we here now, you know, our task is to become unpredictable. We like to say better to create prophecy than live prediction. Prediction, it comes from predicament almost always, you know. So uniqueness. Now, mainstream culture throughout time has not always wanted to, you know, encourage uniqueness in its citizens because that makes them unlockable, upable, you know. But now this is the time for a trickster. And it says, in each person's heart and soul is a unique, playful, creative, disruptive, resilient, you know, and connect, you know, quality that wants to come alive now. And my dedication for myself and all beings that I work with in talks and personal counseling and this wonderful experimental course, you know, is to find each person that unique thing that's there. Whatever we speak to in ourselves, we feed it. And so what I've been doing for, 30-something years, you know, is gathering those things in esoteric spiritual practice, you know, in folk tales, in fairy tales, in detective novels that encourage our uniqueness. You know, again, it's defiant, it's unique, but it's liberating. So, you know, in Coyote Network News, we have our mythological bureau chiefs, but part of what we'll be doing in our beginning at midwinter, which is, I'm so enthused. And enthusiasm is a great word. It means enthusos. It means that which makes the divine within us dance. So I am wildly enthused to gather now this winter with the likes of each person on this call at this, you know, full moon into diaspora. You know, who's here? What's the description of who's here? All those willing to bring alive their unique contribution to the world. It's a gathering of medicine people, you know, who brought what. So even if one doesn't know, there are things within each one of us that go, it's our time now. And part of the beauty of now and the great opportunity of now, when so much crazy sadness is in the world, but so much beauty, to introduce just a little bit of the planetary intelligence. And the model is the planets represent living qualities of intelligence that reside in each one of us and connect us to the world. So as I speak of them, feel a corresponding kind of like, the model being in each one of us is this unique quality of intelligence that yearns to be fed, encouraged, you know, now. So we have Uranus trickster, and everything's got a trickster quality to it. Neptune represents dreams, vision, imagination. And it says we ourselves personally and collectively are limited or expanded by the images that circulate in our mind and in group mind. You know, so if we want to be most effective at changing things, you know, we begin to change the images that circulate in our mind personally and then also collectively. So Neptune represents how a person, each one of us, or how a culture tells itself its own story through poetry and images and metaphor and things wafting through group mind. So Neptune now is in its home realm of Pisces, which is everything that has ever moved the human psyche to kinship. Every poem, every fairy tale, every piece of music, everything. So it's as though the backstage gods are going, ah, the humans, they're so lacking in manners, we're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's play to some of their strong suits. You know, and that's why we are willing to cooperate. So Neptune in Pisces, think of it or feel it, everyone, you know, as a kind of invisible, foggy tendril that actually guides molecular reality behind it. So Neptune would whisper to each one of us right now, imagine that the deepest, most soulful, most hidden, possibly shamed, but beautiful part of each one of us is about to be completely welcome. Wow. It's like, everybody, let's all take a big sigh, like, whoa, we've made it to the right metaphoric climate to address the literal climate, but also in our own lives, it's the healing of anything that we've been through. You know, part of Neptune says, you know, well, certainly better a trickster than a martyr. We'll go into that dynamic. But it also says suffering is not a credential. It's an assignment. You know, so it's a way to tell ourselves our own story. Say we grew up in a not encouraging our uniqueness environment. No, how could that be? And we felt like our voice was not respected. Again, the word respect, very wonderful. It means to look at again, re-again, spect, look. Words are magic. But let's say we might have grown up not respected. So we go, no voice, boo-hoo. But the trickster, Neptune part of all of us goes, no, not boo-hoo. It's an assignment. It's for our defiant, plucky self to go, I know what it's like to not have a voice. So I will be a voice for those things that have a voice. Part of what's beautiful and mysterious about our own individual selves is our goodness. I remember talking, you know, astrological reading for a woman who was in a truly dangerous, bad relationship and couldn't leave for all of the orthodox reasons we know. And I said, okay, but the team of all women in similar circumstances is counting on you. And she just came alive, and she was like, oh, well, if the team's coming on me, counting on me, just went home, got a restraining order, kicked butt, got a divorce, changed her life. And I go, oh, you know, there's a beautiful part of all of us that will sometimes do more for others than we would for ourselves. That was the medicine that she needed at that moment to go, oh, rawr. And I go, there is such beauty. And Neptune right now says, here's a small...
I kind of wanted to tease that out a little bit because it gives a really great example of how, as you have really cultivated this trickster medicine, it allows you to respond to situations in an out-of-box way. And so that one little intervention transformed that woman's life. And it's like you had to free yourself first. And so I find it fascinating to listen to you because there's probably nobody that I've heard speak who's more free in their speech patterns and associations and verbal wordplay than you. And so I'd love for you to kind of share a little bit about like how you've cultivated that over time. I mean, I think it's easy to kind of kick back for us and say, well, she's just, you know, wonderfully entertaining and she's like the trickster incarnate. But like, how does it actually turn into a practice of liberation? How do we begin to really do that? I've got a number of great things.
Because I do always, we all aspire to live by our own dedicated teachings, right? And we all you know, fall off the horse of our dedicated teachings every now and then. But trickster does not mind. And trickster, see, different from shaman, they're related. Trickster's very up for, convening the Council of the Dead and many things. But Trickster is really egalitarian, but also it is a model of cooperators are standing by. So whenever we find ourselves in some kind of, and we don't know what to do, Trickster says, better call Trickster. So once I was in a goat getting, an annoying circumstance. It was a gathering of astrologers, and some of them had gone to Fox News and told sort of terrible stories about how, the right wing was going to win and it was going to be good. And I'm like, no. So my goat got gotten, right? And that's part of our dynamic, is when our goat, our Saturn authority, gets got, we have to call it back. So my goat was gotten, and I was like, no. And I was like, no, remember, Caroline, what are the experiments you practice? So I went off, and I go, right, when we don't know what to do, call in Trickster. Call it in. And there was a great meeting at the end of the conference, and Fox News was lined up with its cameras to film these annoying people. And it was in a time of watches, and both of these people in different places, their watches stopped, and they were unable to make it to the stage. And I was like, oh, that's so fabulous! So, again, part of our experiment. Uranus is nature's evolutionary ingenuity that has no category about success-fail. Other parts of us do, right? But Trickster is like, try that, nope, try that, nope, try that. Ooh, that's a keeper. So we gather. So I go, ooh, right, when we don't know what to do, call in what does. It's an equal part of our skill set. And that's also part of our dynamic of, creating an atmosphere where the desirable can happen. But against all odds, are the odds that Trickster kind of loves. It's a wonderful friend of mine. We are gathering from everywhere. Once, just after some terrible, collective bad election, I was sort of on the floor and then going, no, I've got to get up for the team, got to do a radio show. And a wonderful friend of mine, a great Trickster, called in and he said, no, if we're not having fun, we're just not serious enough. And I go, oh, I needed that. right, okay. So that I carry, we carry these things in our magic backpacks, little amulets, and I delight in encouraging all of us to have these things, literalizing metaphor is part of the beautiful dynamic of all language, is literalized metaphor. Here's another fun thing. Well, yes, adventures from real life. I will share secrets. So when I was writing my book, Making the Gods Work for You, there was an objectively really difficult editor, not just for me, but for many people, just threatening much grumpitude. And just for a little example, here's Trickster, because sometimes we need each other when we're too kind of, so I'd written in the book, when there was a flood in Pavlov's laboratory, none of the surviving dogs retained the least trace of their conditioning. Can the great upheaval of human events have less effect on humans than a flood on dogs? And the editor had written in the margins going, Caroline, your readers will not know who Pavlov is. Take this whole thing out. And I was like, ugh. But I had a great ally. We want allies. We need buddies. And she was not invested. So she goes, no. Here, watch this. And she typed in the name Pavlov should ring a bell, and put the whole thing back in. So the Dharma combat with the editor, and we go, no, we want to dance, and we're allowed to set in motion any magical wish of which we ourselves would be the happy recipients. It's a very important piece of ally etiquette. So I had to turn to the book to save the book, going, oh, book, help me save you. So one of the things we like to animate is, may those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And we run this by ourselves. Would, if I were abusing power, would I? Sure, then okay. And I learned from a Santeria friend. Santeria and Vudun, yes, everything's got its superstitions and its profound beauty. Those are what's called transactional forms of spirituality that we're going to be animating this winter. So important. I want to come back to that. We'll see. But so my late Santero friend Marcelino said, in Santeria you literalize metaphors. So if somebody's behaving badly, you write their name on a piece of paper and you put it in the freezer to cool them out. I go, Huh. Now, these are all dodgy things that we kind of want to run by. Like, I haven't done that lately, although it used to be that my refrigerator would be quite full, and during parties I'd go, no, not that ice cube tray, God knows. But every now and then you give amnesty. But so I put
you got a whole cast of despots and dictators in the freezer?
Yeah, definitely. No, to cool it out. It's a worthy experiment, you know. But always, you know, would I be willing to have somebody write my name on a piece of paper and stick it in the freezer if I was behaving badly? Sure, then let it rip. So I did. I put in, you know, those abusing power be moved to a place that can no longer harm themselves by harming others. And 2 weeks later, I got a call from the head of Random House, the head of the whole big thing, who was a very jolly person. We go, oh, we're so sorry, but your editor, who was head of the entire imprint, just suddenly left, and we're puzzled because she left for a much less prestigious job. And I'm like, so I put everything back in the book and was completely unsupervised. And again, go, thank you, trickster. This is good. So we want to be spicy and playful, but that's what I mean about pragmatic mysticism. Because part of our dynamic, it's time to really apply everything in an experimental way. Each person, you know, and to tease it into our own life working well so that we can contribute our considerable gifts that we all have, known and unknown, to the world at this time. It might be one way we define wealth. Jupiter chimes in and says to each one of us on this call, I will make you a wealthy person by your definition of wealth, which is not limited to money, but it doesn't exclude money either. You know, you define it, we'll fill your order. And that's part of the beauty of this language, is we all have these qualities of intelligence and gifts within each one of us. And part of the function of this beautiful language that we'll be animating and honoring in depth in this midwinter to almost up to springtime, it's so perfect. You know, midwinter is, you know, February 3rd when we begin. It's called one of the four gates of power. You know, there's midwinter and then May Day and Lammas and Halloween, just as important as solstices and equinoxes to all indigenous people. It's where you call in power. And it's where Persephone lights her candle and begins ascending up from the underworld as we begin on February 3rd, and we with her. You know, it became a groundhog, right? But it was really Persephone. So back to the, you know, qualities of intelligence that we'll be cultivating and honoring and feeding and encouraging so that all parts of us come alive. Is, you know, how do we give to each part of our psyche the work it does best? And here comes Trickster again. So Saturn is the part of us that receives the inherited script, you know, from father and all kinds of things, but it's our autonomy, it's our goat. You know, Saturn is really good at setting intention, defining things, taking vows, but it's really terrible at how. How am I going to do this? Oh, that plunges us into depression. And we're going to get through this winter without depression, by God.
Hunched shoulders and, like, soldiering forward. And it's like it's trying to just muscle its way through. Where it's like
right, and it's also the powerful...
Trickster is more the dance.
Right. And it's the powerful, kind of reality police that goes, you can't do that. You know, chances are a million to one against you. And that's why I love Granny Weatherwax, wonderful character from Terry Pratchett, who goes, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10 when your heart is dedicated, so buzz off. There we go. So Saturn's job in all of us is to set intention. Jupiter and Uranus, path-opening, luck-increasing, trickster, are parts of us also that say, we'll do how. Now, do everything common sense, you know, but we'll do the how part in a way that makes you bark with laughter and reaffirming that you're part of a whole larger embrace. You know, it was Andy Weil and I who created, you know, back when I was a teenager, this concept of benign paranoia, right, that the universe is a conspiracy for your benefit. Others have taken that idea, but it came out of our council, and we go, well, what if? Why not entertain that story? And the power of stories, sometimes with stories, we don't know if they're true, but we know if they come alive and we can ride them. The fresh telling of a story brings it alive, which is also, you know, as we journey into winter with fairy tales and myths, you know, as we bring the story alive, these are time-tested, you know, wonderful things, gifts from the ancestors to help us now, of immediate and direct pertinence. Just as a little bit of what we'll be exploring. So, you know, all the myths, all the ancestors, you know, cooperators are standing by. Everything wants to help each one of us individually that we can also contribute our gift to the world now. Mm. You know, and so just a little bit that I found amazing is the Mabinogion is the kind of Welsh Arthurian legends, powerful, amazing, dark. But they're collected in the 10th century, but they're much older. And there comes a moment where the elders get together and they go, oh, you know, men just found out they have something to do with children and things were going so well before this. But we can see that soon women will become property and all kinds of stuff. We can see an unfortunate future for humans in which they will set forth on their individual little course and they will lose kinship not only with each other but with nature until the earth herself might die. They wrote this. Okay, and then they said, there will be those who gather, possibly on this call, who keep all the value of their unique journey. That's important, that individual journey that we've all been through and our ancestors all been through. It's all pertinent to be brought alive now in meaningful giftedness and replenishment for ourselves. Keep all the value of our individual journey, but we'll join once again in telepathic kinship, and then they can save the earth. They wrote this to us from, like, you know, a bazillion years ago. So all of the myths are guiding, you know, and that's part of dusting off what's been dissed. Like, that's just a myth. That's just a fairy tale. I love that neuroscience a couple of years ago came out with their study and proudly proclaimed, we've discovered that people remember things better in stories. We go, you cute little whippersnapper, modern neuroscience. Right, stories are how cultures passed on their science, their botany, their intimacy with the environment, all packed in symbolism. And part of what we're going to do is, you know, we can excavate those things. Again, everything wants to, you know, give us a gift. And that brings us also to luck. We can actually increase luck. There was a study at Cambridge University. It was sort of silly, but really important. About how luck increases. Luck increases when we run on the fuel of curiosity and generosity. And just the little bit of it, if we have time, but they talk to unlucky people, self-described, you know, unlucky in love, unlucky in parking spaces, you know, and lucky people in small and large ways. And they told each one of them separately to go to a particular cafe and meet with people. Now, on the way to the cafe, they drop money. Right? And at the cafe, there was no open table, but there was open seating. And at one table, they'd put a bunch of investors and creative people who were going to fund anybody's project who sat there. So the self-described lucky person walks down the street, sees the $20 bill, there's nobody around. Intuitively, again, trickster, we can increase our intuition. We can, we'll come back with this, but thank goodness I have 7 weeks to explain everything. We can increase our intuition. So the lucky person intuitively goes to the right person, to the right table, and says, I just found this money, how jolly, let me buy you all a drink. Luck. Self-described unlucky person, there was a slight supernatural quality. Other people picked up the money before she got there, and then she just sort of walked by, didn't notice it, arms folded, and, you know, sat down by herself in the cafe. Very simple. But again, that idea of a kind of bounding outward, like, hello, what's this? Oh, yeah. What's the next thing? There you go. Yeah.
That's an amazing example. I want to bring in a little bit of the Saturn element here and make sure we get to some of the points that we said on the page that we would do today.
Let's talk
a little bit about practices. So, I mean, it's clear there's an amazing playfulness of your mind and the word. So let's share a little bit about how people can actually create this as a practice to expand the range and playfulness of our mind and the ways that we can kind of dance into these things.
Yes. Well, absolutely. So each planet, you know, again, represents a living quality of intelligence that comes to us with practices, visualizations, everything. So even, you know, right now, you know, right this moment, you know, we're going to begin our session one, module one, you call it in grown-up language. Yes, thank you. Becoming ever more effective storytellers, you know, sparking our imagination and crafting our language. So part of my dedication, you know, forever First, you know, Jupiter's got a color. It's deep violet, so we can just imagine ourselves infused in deep violet going on. And then all of the storytellers that we've ever loved, in fact, the Earth herself as a storyteller, we live in a storytelling creation where everything is telling us its story by its shape, its color, its song. And if we just approach the world with informed, reverent curiosity, we'd be in collaborative cahoots again. So Jupiter, storytelling, is in Virgo, language, precision. We go, linguistic precision guides the vision. So how we tell the story has everything to do with what happens. The story magnetizes the molecules of its manifestation. So very often people, you know, ourselves and to other will go, you know, whaley, whaley, terrible story, this, you know, this, blah, 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 blah. And again, the power of small words. So I just go, how about the word yet? You know, oh, I can't get my stuff together, blah, blah, blah. Yet, you know, because, you know, or even more powerful than yet is until now. Whaley, whaley, whaley. Until now, these little tiny words, you know, again, like Coyote putting a little mini lightning in the closed loop story and opening it up into a spiral. Because words, language, one of my primary dedications and what I'm so enthused to speak to everybody about, whether, again, you're a public speaker or just in the inner narrative of how we tell ourselves our own story, is so powerful. And language is one of the earliest technologies, some people call it. Language is magic. When we go backwards to the source of all language, you know, it is invocative. So how we use language and metaphor, very important, has everything to do with what happens to us, again, personally or collectively. So Uranus Trickster chimes in and says, we are big gods. We don't really care what you humans do. We care the manner in which you do it, that it be from freedom and choice. So you can use the word fight, but we want you to choose the word fight from many, many, many words you could use. So because when we use the word fight, we're going to fight for justice. We're going to fight for against global warming. We go, it's a hot word. And our brains are metaphoric. And when we use the word fight, our brains download this kind of aggressive, you know, whatever. And we go, you can do that, but you want to know you're doing it. You know, again, that model of small words, so many, you know, on our team, I mean, I don't want to be the boring Pollyanna or chiming in, you know, I try and wait for people to ask, but sometimes, you know, got to cross the line to know where it is. Sometimes Trickster crosses the line. But so many in our team, you know, out there going, we really want to have an impact. You know, and I go, really, impact? A short, violent encounter. Okay. You know, how about an influence, a long, curvy, spiraling influence? And there's a place for impact. You know, if you're having a heart attack, you want somebody to come, you know, I mean, it's the allopathic medicine thing. If you run over by a train, yeah, you want, you know, impactful, you know, medicine to bring you back to life. But it's just part of, so we're going to be cultivating more and more words, linguistic diversity to honor diversity. And neuroscience did come up with something quirky and kind of useful. They further said, we've discovered that when people learn new words, it stimulates the same portion of the brain as sex. And I go, ooh, that's fun. So part of what we're doing, you know, again, into the winter of language, is expanding our vocabulary, ooh, and therefore becoming sexier. But also the language is part of, you know, and that brings us also to etymology. Again, when we look words up in a etymological dictionary, it brings us to this animistic, everything alive realm. You know, respect is good, but for our, you know, we're heading into this wild, crazy time where Trickster is the one part of us that can really discern between the con man and the trickster, because Americans have had a hard time until now discerning the difference. And the former is imprisoning and the latter is, you know, liberating. But So the trickster,
more about,
trickster,
say more about,
you know,
that, the con man versus the trickster. Yeah.
Yeah, this is a very important theme for our winter thing. It is part of, you know, anything, any good story ties us to all stories. So one of the main kind of organizing stories is we go, Pluto and Capricorn, death of old structures. So we have dominance and empire and grumpiness running the world, you know, row you bastards, and okay, runs on fossil fuels. It's beginning to collapse, but taking so much life with it. Underneath, here we are, team, a Renaissance council of who brought what. All the income free, says Neptune. You know, if you've been hiding out, or you're reclusive, or you've been, you know, just only spending time at the yoga studio, whatever, you know, it's like, come on out. So because underneath, and here's what wants to happen, whatever we want wants us. You know, it's a magnetic dance. It's like when lightning strikes from the sky to the earth, there's a receptive upwelling from the earth that makes it happen. So there's what's going down, right? What's coming up is, you know, a culture of reverent Renaissance ingenuity cooperate with nature's guiding genius, which is within each one of us. That's our unique self. That's our trickster self. So we have a discernment then, you know, what in our language or whatever is imprisoning and dominating and what is liberating. So the con man can look like a trickster, but, you know, but really is imprisoning. The trickster truly is liberating, the way we're defining it. You know, and that means also language, is it liberating or constraining? Is our metaphor liberating or constraining? Is our manner of relating and offering liberating or an imposition? You know, and that's part of something I've been working with a lot of activists on, what I call ally etiquette, because it's there's a mystery to Uranus trickster, because it's uniqueness and resilience and coyote and lightning and all those things we've spoken of. But it's also associated with democracy, equality, synchronicity. And here's a trickster example. So I was wondering, wonder is a very wonderful thing because it invites revelation. So I was wondering, what do those last ideas have to do with it? You know, democracy, equality, synchronicity. And no sooner did I wonder that than life arranged itself to absolutely reveal that when we treat each other as equals, meaning on stage we have different roles and different skills and we all need each other, but backstage, if we have respect straight across, the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. And this is what makes for a sporting cultural transformation. We might say the Dementors of Doom, bless their hearts, you know, lumbering towards the abyss of planetary extinction, carrying life with it. So Trickster pulls out, you know, pulls out scissors and cuts the net so that, you know, can't pull life over it. But those guys, you know, bless their hearts, we are friends of their soul and therefore enemies of their project, says Trickster. So, you know, those guys may have more lawyers or money, but we, if we treat each other well, then we have the trickster synchronicity of the right, you know, being danced into place. And let me take another really important thing that science, wonderful metaphor. You know, I work sometimes with wonderful Janine Benyus, founder of biomimicry. Rather than looting nature, why don't we borrow her recipes? And so I asked her last time I hosted her on radio, what is this biological term, vertical integrated hierarchy? And she said, oh, it's this beautiful thing in nature. It means everything in nature contains the plan of the larger thing it's a part of. So a tendon in our arm is made of twisted, bundled sticks, and each one of those is twisted, bundled sticks, and each one of those is twisted, you know, fractal, fractal, fractal. And she said, this is what makes for nature's ingenuity, resilience, and self-assembling. And she's very happy for my trickster self to take all science and turn it into metaphor, strategic metaphor. So I go, oh, I love that, Janine. The more we, all of us, each one of us on this call and everywhere, the more we define inner dedication strengthens our outward signal, so that we're more likely to be self-assembled, so that we're more likely to be danced into place with the right people, the right funding, the right connections, the right whatever, in order to, you know, really have a beautiful renaissance rising from this while still honoring grief. The dynamic is, you know, we want to know that the art of storytelling that will be, that's right, I left your important schedule far behind here. The art of storytelling is the five-act structure that will be animating in Module 1, derived from nature. And it's how we tell ourselves our own story and how we are storytellers in the world. So a friend of mine who's a playwright says, the problem with modern storytelling is it doesn't know about the five-act structure. Four acts is tragedy, five acts is comedy, not necessarily ha-ha, but redemption and how it can turn out okay. And she says briefly what we'll be going into in Module 1, Act 1 is here we are, Act 2 is away, woo, Act 3 is oops, whoa, uh-oh, Act 4 is evil, whoa, and Act 5 is the kiss, the wedding, the vision, the how it could be, there you go. And she said that, you know, either Hollywood sometimes will end with Act 4, you know, life sucks and there you have it, or skip Act 4, you know, and tack on a happy ending. And she goes, no, the complete Act 5 structure, and that's kind of part of our dynamic. So Module 2, I don't know if we'll get to everybody, democratic animism. This is a really important part of our trickster repertoire,
Let me just interject here because you're talking directly about the upcoming program. I want to just give people the URL for this. I mean, so what Carolyn's referring to is this amazing new 7-week program, Breakthrough Uranus Derived Trickster Medicine. So it's called The Way of the Trickster, and you can find it at trickstercourse.com. Very excited for this. It's a really innovative new program, and so she's starting to take us on a little tour of the roadmap here for where we're going to be going. So, Module 2.
That's great, and I'm very appreciative of our experiment, Stephen. I know that it's an experiment for both of us, and I really honor it. So, yeah. So, democratic animism. I like to say pragmatic mysticism. That's the thing I left hanging in the air. Meaning, throughout human history, spiritual practices have been tolerated or exiled, but not completely integrated. The exquisite beauty of Tibetan Buddhism, one of the greatest visualizing trainings going on that we'll be deriving from all traditions, their useful contribution. But the lives of actual Tibetans and women and animals, 14th century feudalism. So now is the time to tease from everything we've ever loved, every social activist thing, every spiritual principle, into how does it make the world better, each person's life better, tangibly better, that we may then contribute to making the world better. You know, the Chinese saying, peace in our hearts, peace in the house, peace in the neighborhood, peace in the world. You know, we say, all war is a failure of imagination, but all peace is a triumph of the imagination. So we want to kind of honor that dynamic, again, teasing. So pragmatic mysticism, Module 2, democratic animism. And what this is several things that we are gathering all the time. We're gathering these things that we carry with us that are really important. So years ago, talking to Lakota Elder on radio and about coyote, I live with actual coyote, which is coyotes do not know shame. They're not dogs, right? But they do know negotiation. They know, and that's what we're up to, negotiation. So the Lakota Elder said, you know, we Lakota didn't hunt alone, you know. Those gifted at trance, and we're going to be training in trance and reverie, would go into a trance and would broker a deal with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. And if you want to destroy a culture, destroy its capacity to do that. You know, this is part of pragmatic mysticism and democratic animism both. And I go, ooh, this is really, really, really valuable. And right after that, synchronously, wonderful conversation with a friend who is sort of disguised as a psychologist, but, you know, many other things. Archaeologist, lives half the year in Crete. And she said, you know, the modern concept of worship has gotten so colonial. You know, you are great, now give me this thing. And she said, in hunter-gatherer society and throughout all animistic, wise, nature-based cultures, there was great reverence and respect between the visible and the invisible, between the incarnate tangible and the backstage kind of, ooh. But it was a much more collaborative relationship. The invisible seeks incarnational invitation as much as we seek communion with it. I go, oh, I love this. I'm keeping this with me in my pocket forever. As long as we have a hierarchical spirituality, useful in past historic periods, maybe not now, you know, we're going to end up with, you know, Dick Cheney. You know, so this idea of democratic animism, and it's what anthropologists call transactional spirituality, kind of stuffy term, but in animism, in voodoo, and that's also part of our dynamic, dedicated acts of beauty serve as an invitation for power to enter the world. And the one example I love, and I'll be drawing from much literature, there was a great writer in the 40s in England, Dion Fortune, ran a mystery school, Kabbalistic scholar, but wrote these trippy novels about what is the spiritual function of sex. They're really trippy, especially because they're written in the 1940s. And she's got a great character who says, you know, I am Morgan Le Fay Morgan, I am a priestess of Isis in the modern world. The real Isis, the goddess of nature. Anyway, so there's a great moment where she's all rattled. Nothing's going well in her life. Just everything. But she has already told us the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And she goes, and that's part of what sex is for. Okay, so that's over there. But she comes to a point where nothing's going right. The guy's not, whatever. And she is outside under the full moon, which is waxing now, just her mind. And she steps back inside, and she sees the humble vase of flowers that she'd put there with the dedication that it serve as an invitation for Isis, the real Isis, the beautiful goddess, to enter the world. And she sees the full moon shining through the window, illuminating this vase of flowers, and she feels this incredible downrush of energy, like, and she goes, wow, you know, it didn't matter what I was thinking. It didn't matter about my worried mind. The dedicated act of beauty, no matter how humble, serving as an invitation, had clearly been accepted. And in the language of the adepts, I was back on my contacts. And I love that antique, kind of esoteric British phrase, back on one's contacts. But that's what we're talking about. You know, when it's like, yes, it's working. Yes, we emerge from kind of into, no, we're part of something. Alone, we can all feel like, But when we gather, even telepathically like now, you know, this support, this increase of luck, this increase of the synchronous field. So part of the importance of now is let's entertain, you know, believe nothing, entertain possibilities, that we're moving into a field of resonant increased synchronicity. It's pretty wild. And what qualities do we want to cultivate? So to each person now, it says, well, if we're moving into this field where we meet our inner lives and our outer lives very fast. You know, I mean, this is a temporary little lull here, and we gather our wits midwinter, and then it gets really wild. We're in the rock and roll of now and how to be effective players in this field. So each one of us goes, well, if I entertain that possibility, what do I want to connect with? What's the quality? Now, the cool thing, Neptune chimes in, says, we don't even need to know. Neptune says, we just recommend you run on the fuel of wonder. I wonder what I want to connect with. I wonder what would make my life better. Neptune's called the higher octave of Venus. The wondering also serves as an invitation for encouraging power to enter the world. And in the modern world, everybody's supposed to have a snappy sense of identity and five-year plan and whatever, although things are kind of crazy. That's changing. But to the ancient world, part of where we'll be drawing from, not knowing but wondering was considered a very advanced accomplishment. You know, look, Caroline and Stephen have won out of certainty. Now the divine can find them. Like, oh. So wonder magnetizes revelation. You know, I wonder what the, oh! And see, right now we have lightning and fog, Uranus. And so when we wonder, it attracts the lightning in which we can see the thing, you know, through the fog, and then it might get foggy again, you know. But again, as we become more intimate, and without hubris or presumption, we want to see how we can change for the better each person's life with blessing, and also change molecular reality, that we backstage can conjure the desirable reality, and then at a certain point we're going to pull the switch on the tracks and go, and that's there now, there we go, you know, full of blessing. And, you know, becoming disciplined wild people, you know, breaking old spells, we can go into everything.
Let me jump in here, because I mean, the way your mind works is just absolutely stunning to behold. And I'll just share a little bit just kind of in terms of the structure of the course so people really kind of get a sense for it. So there's going to be 7 modules starting on February 3rd, as Carolyn mentioned, and it's going to run on Wednesdays at 5 p.m. Pacific time. And we do this where you get the live interactive time, you get to Q&A, you get to dance with Carolyn directly. There's also time for breakout groups as well as the Facebook group. And I know there's going to be a lot of magic and mischief in this whole course because the whole focus is Trickster Medicine. It really is going to be calling forth more of your unique self. As Carolyn has said, it's like more of your magic, more of your spontaneity, more of your creativity. So there's really going to be a field of permission given. And the modules, or she wanted to originally call them shift, each shift, the trickster shift, but I want to just clarify, you know, we kind of follow our stodgy module structure. But so that you're basically taking you through different skill sets. One is around effective storytelling, one is around cultivating reverent irreverence, then becoming disciplined wild people and dedicated acts of beauty and expanding your metaphoric agility and becoming an artist of atmosphere and claiming the power of blessing. So in a way, each one is like a different facet of the diamond of what the trickster represents, and there's going to be a lot of spontaneity, as you've even seen in this hour with Carolyn today, is that there's a dancing through the different streams of possibility and weaving of metaphor and magic. And so it's probably going to not be a conventional, just structured ding, 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 but more of a exploratory adventure into each of these different facets over the course of the 7 weeks.
And I do want to chime in that we want this to be pragmatic mysticism so that each person beginning at the beginning can also be honing something big. Jupiter likes big, that they would really like to do, to be, to have. And by the power of telepathic resonance, we want to bless each person, you know, and the group itself, and experiment also with personal and collective influence. But to really manifest, you know, to really bring things into being. Maybe, you know, some people know what they want to do and some people don't. All is welcome and all is perfect. But if you have a big project, known or unknown, you know, whatever you love loves you. You know, whatever you want wants you. There's a magnetism dance. So we want to it's a huge opportunity, and yes, it is an, you know, unpredictable and lively, but also scouting reports. I love that this may well be a really quite diverse team of people. You don't have to believe anything, you know, people who are astrologers and people who hate astrology. It doesn't matter. It's a language that is useful to us and beautiful and magic and actually true, but you don't need to believe anything. But to actually make the world better and our own personal lives better through these skills that, you know, we've all been working on, but I've been, you know, this is my, you know, unique contribution to all of our unique contribution. You know, I've been working on this since 1970, really, or maybe earlier than that, maybe our past lives come into play too. But yes, whatever you were saying.
Well, I want to echo back the pragmatism of this too, is because, you know, part of the reason we just launched the Shift Network at all was to create shift in the world. And so Uranus is right. If you're going to be upsetting the old order and creating change, it's like you want to be able to do so with as much grace as you can. And this much more playful, spontaneous, like unifying way to do it versus kind of angry, you know, seize the barricades and force change it's a lot more aligned with our natural evolutionary impulse. So you can find common ground with people who might appear to be very different. So I really see this as a course that is about a personal liberation and awakening and kind of frees up our consciousness to travel new pathways, opens up new fields of possibility and relationship, but also it really is cultivating a skill set to change the world in a way that is that's more graceful and more fun. So I also want to bring your attention to, again, you can find all the details at trickstercourse.com. Again, that's trickstercourse.com. So you can read all of the modules, and there's a lot of fun on the page and also a lot of depth, so I encourage you to take the time to read through it. And there's some extra bonus sessions that are going to complement the core material. We've got a number of cool things. We've got an audiobook from Carolyn called Making the Gods Work for You. There's also a recording from her called Scheherazade is the Earth, and in Fall Equinox Evening with Carolyn Casey, it's a 2015 autumnal equinox recording. And so those are all part of the package of what you get when you sign up. And there's also today two extra special bonuses, one that we've bundled together for the Winter Solstice Double Audio Pack. One is called Dangerous in a Good Way, and the other is Better a Trickster Than a Martyr, Solstice Kahoot. So, Carolyn, you want to share anything about those extra bonuses people get when they sign up?
Well, I do. Better a Trickster Than a Martyr is an important part of our dynamic, which is we're composting martyrdom. The trickster and the martyr both have the same impulse, which is to take on the unconscious material of the families into which we were born and the culture as well. So the martyr takes it on and then goes, oh, I've taken it on and now I don't feel so well. Okay. Trickster takes it on, same impulse, but does not presume to do it by themselves, but calls in what can metabolize the poison. Scheherazade is the earth, that's the Bioneers talk. Right, that is a really rousing kick butt, 800 person packed room with wonderful musicians. I often work with musicians. Making the gods work for you. We did a 2-night live performance of the book. So the recording became a book, which became another recording. That's how things go. And we just rocked. And it's with my beautiful musician collaborators, Anna Michaela Gaston and Jackie McMillan. So we're bringing a lot of what we're going to be doing in this course, but it's really good. I really stand by it. People listen to it over and over again. And I do. I love it. So that's available.
Wow. Awesome. It's an amazing bonus package, and I just know this is going to be one of the most fun and liberating and practical courses we offer, because it really is about becoming freer spiritually, freer psychologically, more able to express our unique selves, and better able to influence our world instead of impact our world. We're done with that impacting the world. So it's going to be a great program. So again, you can find it all at trickstercourse.com, and we've kept the price very accessible. It's 3 payments of $109, or you save 10% in full, $297. So it's you can see all the details, read through the modules, and I strongly encourage you to go do it now, because then you can read through, get a sense for it, and really tune in. And if you get a sense, if you get the green light from your inner spirit that wants to be liberated in this way, then go for it, and you get the Winter Solstice Double Audio Pack, which is actually a $50 value by itself. So you get the extra incentive of those two, the Dangerous in a Good Way and Better a Trickster Than a Martyr solution, or Solstice Kahoot. So great stuff. Thank you so much, Carolyn, for this offering. Anything left in your heart that you want to say to folks who considering joining you on the journey starting February 3rd?
Well, I love somebody saying, listen for your destiny, and when it calls, release your plans. So we go, yes, may all be magnetized. May we all move our emotional default setting to woof woof, want to play as an offering. May we be effective. One last thing also, I love Lewis Hyde says, Coyote is very lucky if enough con men show up to fool her, because it's how we become cunning and develop our skills. And so we go, well, we're very lucky. So to be agents of discernment, and we know when we look out at the world, that much of the worst of humans is being exposed and drawn to the surface. So we want to be the antidote. And just the last little bit, is we love freedom. To react to anything is not free, but it's to be kind of imprisoned and carry around a portable prison for ourselves. But to cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses is liberating and unites us with nature's evolutionary ingenuity, and then we have backup. And do we have time for one little example of that?
Actually, we're a little over our time, so I think we should probably wrap here.
Okay.
All right.
And other exciting, inspiring examples of all these things in practice await.
All right. Well, thank you for a truly delightful, liberating, and illuminating hour. It's been fantastic, Carolyn. And I want to also thank all of you who have joined us here today, and strongly encourage you and invite you and magnetize you into taking the next stage of the journey with Carolyn, since she will help free you in some very magical ways.
And one last thing. My name is actually Caroline.
Caroline. I've been saying
there
it wrong
go.
The whole way.
Yep, right,
Caroline.
That's okay. Okay. There we go. We're all liberated now.
We're all liberated now. So again, you can find all the details at trickstercourse.com, and we'll look forward to seeing you in the program. All right, everyone, have a beautiful rest of your day. Goodbye now.